The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yappa-toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, we have filmmaker Lee Kalinske.
Hey, what's happening?
And we have Mr. El Grandito Hassan Godwin on the phone. So on this week's show, where's my notes? Where's my notes? There it is. L-Man Jenny Feldy interviews filmmaker Gabe Simbalista. But before we do any of that, we have to take it away to the news. Do 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 do. You know, we've only been doing this for 24 years. You know, never a dull moment. The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks of sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi.
Or your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks of the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of conflictness in pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November for the 21st. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to mention our shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday famous Dresden Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Hurricane, and Millie Portes. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. There's a little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 is on sale right now, and issue 2 should be coming out in April, so fingers crossed for that.
Why don't you know?
Well, it's the universe may, you know, was it? What did you just say, Hassan? Barring any instances? Was that you?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So, barring
right,
any
fine,
instances.
Fine.
The book will come out.
It's positive vibes. It'll be out.
Yes. It will be out in April. Yeah, so let's see. We'll start off with the sad news. Let's see what we got for the sad news.
Should be plenty.
Actually, we only have two bits of sad news. We have actor Robert Reed Carradine died recently from suicide. While Robert was in a slew of movies and TV shows, he is perhaps best known for his role of Sam McGuire, the father, on the series Lizzie McGuire, which ran for 65 episodes, and, of course, Lewis in The Revenge of the Nerds, as well as the sequels Part 2, 3, and 4. He was 71 years old. Lee, I know you were a fan of his, right?
Yeah, I did like his stuff. I mean, well, one of my favorite movies is The Long Riders with him, because they had, like, a bunch of brothers in it, right? So it was the Carradines, it was the Keaches, right?
And, oh, okay.
And the Quaids, actually. So, right, they were all in the Jesse James gang. And
okay.
It was kind of like this cool old Western. So I like that. I like that. I mean, Revenge of the Nerds, I know everybody loves, whatever, but The Long Riders for me was like for what I wanted to watch, you know, and see.
And you met him, right?
So I met him, what was it, at the Aviation Museum. I forgot.
Oh, so that was the CradleCon.
The CradleCon, right, yeah. So I met him there, which was actually cool. And his daughter, which was they were nice, you know. They were he was trying to get out. That was the funny part. He was like, "It's over. I got to get out of here. I got to make a plane. I'll just sign this and say, hey, what's up?" for like 2 seconds, but I got to go.
There was a picture of Harrison Ford, and he signed it. And I was like, I just got to move on.
Right,
gotta keep moving.
Right, get off my plane. You know.
Sam, are you a fan of Robert's work?
I didn't realize he committed suicide, unfortunately. Yeah, of course. I'm unlikely. I know him strictly from Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
And there was a memorable performance of that. I've seen him in other things, but I mean, I know him specifically. Every time I saw him from something else, I said, "That's Revenge of the Nerds guy." So
he was in Escape from L.A. He had like one scene, and he got like,
"Oh my goodness!" yeah, he did. Oh my god. Okay, and Escape from L.A.
Yeah, Escape from L.A. There you go.
So he was 71 years old. Moving on for the second and last bit of sad news. Actress Lauren Ann Chaplin also died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. Lauren was perhaps best known as Kathy Anderson, nicknamed Kitten, who was the youngest child for 196 episodes of the TV series Father Knows Best, which ran from 1954 to 1960. She was 80 years old. I've never seen Father Knows Best, but I know it existed. You, Hassan, you know Father Knows Best? Yes, no?
Nope. Nope. Because that's just way before my time. Thank you for not knowing. That's before my time.
But we know shows that were before your time. I Love Lucy, Honeymooners. Come on, man.
I know. But I've chosen to take it personally. But no, I don't. I've never seen her, performances. But okay. It's too bad. It's sad that she's gone.
Hassan Lee.
I mean, I knew of the show. I just didn't know what else.
Did you ever watch it? Or?
I mean, if I saw it in a rerun, maybe.
Before our time, Mark.
So
unfortunately.
Stop trying to age us.
Unfortunately, yeah.
He was 80 years old, and that is it for the sad news. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Cosplayers, exhibitors, and celebrities, oh my! Stand by, Connecticut. Dragon's Realm Comic Con is coming March 21st, 22nd at the Danbury Sports Dome, located at 25 Shelter Rock Lane. It will be Danbury's only premier comic convention. This event is your one-stop shop for everything pop culture, featuring celebrity meet and greets, exhibitors selling the coolest products, various discussion panels, a gaming area, and of course, cosplay contests. Tickets will be sold at the door or get them online via ticketspice.com. Link for tickets are on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Visit drcomiccon.com for more.
Hey, I'm Mike Kingston, the writer and creator of Headlocked.
And I am WWE Hall of Famer Jerry the King Lawler. And guess what you're listening to? You're listening to It Came From the Radio!
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Hey guys, this is Kari Payton. You're listening to It Came From the Radio, so keep listening.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hi, this is Amy Benedict from DS9 and Torchwood, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
This is Gray Griffin, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Hi, this is Aaron Gray from Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking with me, filmmaker Lee Kalinske in the studio.
Hello.
And Mr. Hassan Godwin on the phone.
Hola.
So, as we always do, we are done with the sad news, so now we're doing from the not-as-sad news. Ready? From the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. The new animated film Goat, which came in at the number 2 spot last week, has taken the number 1 spot in the domestic box office, pulling in an additional $16.8 million in ticket sales in its second week of release, beating out the film Wuthering Heights, which came in at number 2 spot, making an additional $14 million also in its second week of release. For those of you keeping track, Avatar is still the highest grossing film of this year with $399.5 million, followed by Zootopia 2 with $423.9 million. Now, as I've been mentioning since the beginning of the year, because both of those movies came out last year, the numbers are slightly askew, and this year Avatar has made $149.2 million, Zootopia has raked in $86 million, and of note, apparently me, I have been mistaken for this entire year, as I mentioned multiple times on this show that The Housemaid, which is the third highest grossing film of this year so far, came out this year, but in fact, it came out also last year. So the top three movies of this year all came out last year.
Yeah.
Well, did you see any of them?
Well done, Mark.
Lee, did you see any of them?
I saw Avatar.
You saw Avatar?
Yeah, last year.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't see the other ones.
Zootopian Housemaid?
Housemaid? No, I don't even know what Housemaid is.
That's the Amanda Seyfried, Sydney Sweeney movie?
Oh, yeah, that's beyond my demographic.
No, I saw it, and I thought it was pretty darn good. It fell in the lines, I've been saying this many times, it fell along the lines of The Barbarian, where you're thinking it's one movie,
really?
And you're watching it, and it's not that type of movie at all. It has a little twist, and another twist, and you're like, oh, it's a completely different movie.
All right.
So if you go back and see it again, which I intend to, now that I know the twists and everything, I will see it from a different perspective.
Is it in the theater still?
It should still be in the theaters, yeah. Yeah, still be in the theaters. Hassan, have you seen... I know you saw Avatar, right?
Yes, I did.
And no Zootopia? Still no Zootopia?
No Zootopia.
And Housemaid?
Heck no.
Heck no, okay.
Wow.
Heck no.
Give it a
chance. Very strange that you've seen it, but okay. With all the other movies around to be able to be seen... that we speak of on a regular basis, somehow you've seen Housemaid of all of them. Weird. What could it have been?
It had certain things that I felt I needed to watch.
Certain elements.
Uh-huh. Certain elements.
Four of them, specifically.
Yes. All right. So that was that.
Now I have to watch the trailer for that one.
So
okay.
Moving on. From the...
That's a lot of nuts!
Department. Recently, at an auction... The Pokemon Pikachu Illustrator card, owned by wrestler/YouTuber Logan Paul, has sold for a Guinness Book of World Record breaking. Want to make a guess, Lee? Guess how much a Pokemon card sold for?
Oh, man.
World record breaking?
20 million.
20 million. Hassan, what do you think?
50 million.
50 million. Wow, I feel bad. It's only 16 million. $492,000.
Well, that's your fault for making such a big deal of...
A card, record-breaking, $16 million, still pretty big, but fine.
It could have been anything. We live in a terribly crazy world.
Fine. Auctioneer says, this is a historic night for not only the Pokemon community, but a historic night for the entire collectible community. We just keep showing there are no barriers. These things that we all love and appreciate keep going up and keep setting records, keep bringing people together. I do not think...
Also, we just made $16 million. How cool is that?
So it was an auction, so they probably get, like, what, 20% of the deal, and they get, like, a buyer's fee, so they made a couple of million dollars.
20% of $16 million is pretty darn decent.
For just... Putting a card on auction. A card. One card.
That's crazy.
One card.
That, yes. All right.
Do I have that card in my house? I don't know.
You do have Pokemon cards, right?
My son
your
does, son, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You do buy osmosis that your son has.
Right, exactly.
You own everything at your house.
Go in and just grab all those cards. You'll thank me later, son.
Right, exactly.
What would you do with a card that you sold for $16 million?
I would do a lot.
Or what would you do for? What would you do if you bought a card for $16 million?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. Is it cool looking at least?
I don't know.
All right, okay. I mean, frame it. I don't know. Stick it in a vault.
I would think it's already framed.
Yeah, I guess
it can't be a loose card. It's got to be encapsulated in a little sealed thing, right?
Oh, is it graded 9.8?
What do you think, Hassan? What are your thoughts on that?
Which question? What would I do with the $16 million, or what would I do with a card?
What would you do with a card that was worth $16 million? And don't say I sold it.
Oh.
You were ready for that, and I was ready for you being ready for that.
I would fold it into a little paper plane and throw it across the living room. Because if I was able to spend $16 million on it, that means I've got $1 billion on hand. Right. If I was going to do that.
I take the most expensive stamp and mail it. Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, so moving on. Ready, Ryan? From the... Department, none other than that's a good lead up. None other than William Shatner has announced he is planning to release a heavy metal album. Shatner says, "I have explored space. I have explored time. Now I explore distortion. 35 metal virtuosos, thunderous guitars, chaos with purpose, honest intensity, unapologetic exploration." At 94, one does not slow down. One turns the volume up. So prepare yourselves. We're about to boldly headbang where no one has headbanged before. Stay tuned. The metal voyage begins this year. we've had him on the show. I've met him a few times.
Yeah.
But you're 94. Like, what else? He's done everything. Why not make a heavy metal?
Yeah, why not? Do something fun.
Would you purchase and or listen to the heavy metal, Lee?
Well, I mean, is it going to be like his old stuff in a way? Like his like spoken word kind of music where it's like with heavy metal music behind his spoken word? Because that would be kind of funny. I would like listen to it just for a second to see what it's like.
So it's supposed to have metal samples that are like Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, and as well as, quote, a few originals forged in the same cosmic fire. Hassan, you're a musician. What do you think of all that?
He did a song that I heard years ago called Coming... He didn't do it. It was an original song from... I think it was the Kinks who originally did it. But yeah. It was called Common People. And it kind of blew my mind. I thought it was strangely great.
Yeah, I like
you know,
that one
so too. I wouldn't put it past him to do something amazing. But he's 95 years old, so I mean, at this point, if he wanted to do a swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated, I'd say let him do it. He let him do it.
Yeah,
he's one of. We've talked about this many times. Like he's like one of the last celebrities out there who's just like he's done it all. He's the master of his craft. He's like the guy that is multi-generational, cross-platforms. Everybody knows who he is from something. Some may know him from Star Trek. Some may know him as the Priceline guy. Because I remember when he was on our show, I was telling all my friends, we got William Shatner on the show. And they go, who? Like the younger kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, the Priceline guy. Like, oh, the Priceline guy. He's on your show. Or when he was on Boston Legal. Like, he's done much.
Yeah, he's done plenty. It's incredible. I guess like every decade he does something for the most part. I mean, he goes to space for like 2 seconds for real, you know?
And, risk is our business.
I do want to see him perform it, though. That is the thing. I want to see him on stage.
I don't know about that.
If he's fake playing, with the people behind him, I think it'll be just a spectacle to see.
I feel like it's him, a microphone, and Metallica behind him. That's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
All right.
I'd rather not see that. I'd rather hear it than see it because that could go both ways, you know?
All right.
And we don't want to humiliate him at the tail end of his career. We just, you know, we just want to celebrate him. But that could be pretty rough.
All right. So
remember Dick Clark's last Rockin' Eve?
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a little different, though. I mean, I feel like
But you all know exactly what I mean when I say it, right?
Yeah. The air in this room just deflated.
Yes, I'm very sorry, but it could be like that. I don't want it to be like that.
All right. So moving on to the last bit of news, because this is an interesting one. From the Get the AI Out of Here department, none other than Netflix, Warner Brothers, Disney, Paramount, Sony, and the Motion Picture Association of America all have sent cease and desist letters to the Chinese company ByteDance after the release of the new AI program C-Dance 2.0. The letter, in part, says, "The scale and consistency of these results demonstrate systemic infringement rather than inadvertence." In other words, C-Dance's copyright infringement is a feature, not a bug. The harm to the MPA member studio is a significant and ongoing problem. While we acknowledge ByteDance's recent statements to the press, at this point we need far more than general statements. Our ongoing investigation and review of social media platforms continue to reveal examples of C-Dance's producing material that clearly infringes on our members' rights. It is ByteDance itself that has trained its models of the MPA member studio's works without their consent, which is a necessary first step towards its production of infringement output, and release its service without guardrails, and by its own conduct, reproduce and distributed content blatantly infringes the MPA member studio's copyrights.
Wow.
ByteDance says, "Our company respects intellectual property rights.
Bite me."
"And is taking steps to strengthen its current safeguards as we work to prevent the unauthorized use of intellectual properties and likeness by users." This marks the first time all the studios and the Motion Picture Association of America have agreed on anything against AI. I'm blown away by this, and the fact that we've been talking about this for, what, 2 years? No, 3 years now about this
probably,
thing.
Probably, yeah.
Because I remember when they had the strike in the Screen Actors Guild, so that's at least 3 years.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they're all joining forces on this. And why the hell it took so long? That's my question. As a filmmaker, Lee, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's because they're looking so good now. They're looking a lot better. You know, you take Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise and you have them fight for a little while.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, baby!
You know, it's starting to look better and better. And, yeah, I'd be upset if it was all my, you know, material or my likeness if I didn't sign it away that somebody else was kind of, you know, using and not getting compensated for it, you know. I mean, I'm seeing that even speaking of the Star Trek, right? I saw they were making up songs on a YouTube video, and it would be like Spock and, you know, Captain Kirk, and it was like some kind of weird song, and they'd all be in like a trailer park or something like that, and doing like this kind of song that they were singing, and you're kind of like, wow, that looks pretty real, even though, like, and
you know,
most of these guys are not getting
paid. That was legitness.
Yeah,
nobody's getting paid, you know, and now I think just because you could make an action film,
yeah,
you know, that's a lot of money right there, any action movie, right?
Hassan, what are your thoughts?
You knew what my thoughts are on all of this.
Well, I mean, what are your thoughts on the fact that they're all teaming up? Like, that's crazy.
I think it's great. I think it should have happened about 5 years ago. But, yeah. I mean, look, if you go on YouTube now, there's people who are so paranoid about being sued because they're using bits of music and pieces of movie to make their, long-form essays that, you know, they have to alter and distort everything that they show you and then that they play you just to make sure that they can continue to monetize their own videos. But here come these tech bros, and they're allowed to make movies and TV shows. I mean, look, AI wouldn't be half as impressive if you weren't able to use the MCU characters or if you weren't able to use Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt in these fights. If it was just like two people on a bridge somewhere, it would be just as visually impressive, but it wouldn't move any of the needles because nobody would know who these two idiots are. So, like, why should I care? But you have to use licensed characters in order to prove that, that these people in these blockbuster movies can be used and manipulated for whatever we want, and it's all at the touch of a button. If it wasn't for those licensed characters, AI wouldn't be able to sell itself as a viable, technical or technological entity for kids to use so that they can flood the zone, right, with that crap. So it's required for them to do copyright infringement in order for the viability of the product that they're trying to hawk to be appreciated by most of the people. So it's like an ongoing circus and a circle, and it's a little too late for them all to capitulate together and fight against it. although they have a heck of a case.
Yeah.
You know, they could with the violations that they've done so far, they could shut all those companies down. Unfortunately, those companies now technically run the country. So it's a little too late to be upset about any of it.
It might be one of those beat 'em, join 'em type things, right? You can't beat 'em, you're going to join 'em, so they might buy their.
I don't understand. Like the argument for it is ridiculous anyway, because every argument, every time you see one of those, is Hollywood is doomed.
Yes.
So it's
right.
Like, well, why wouldn't Hollywood just take this stuff and use it and make all those movies for cheaper?
I think that's
you know.
What do,
so
yeah.
It's like the argument is moronic in the first place. But then what do you know?
It's so weird because we talked about how SAG, headed by Sean Astin, is like, yeah, we're going to now not fight against AI, but we're going to use it in a way that we're going to, if you're going to use AI, we get a cut of it now. They've already, like, surrendered to it, and they're going to use that money to put into the pension funds of the actors. So I'm like, we've already passed the point of no return, I believe.
I think so.
So we're almost out.
Yeah,
time.
But I just don't.
Seconds, Ron. Go.
I just don't think it's going to do anything more than what it's already done. It's going to get prettier and prettier, but I doubt you can make a full movie out of it anytime soon, within the next 5 years.
5 years? What do you think, Lee? You agree with that? Filmmaker, do you think?
I think it's going faster than you think. I think even if it's maybe 90 minutes, but you probably got a good short out of it. That's for sure.
That was a good short, but a full movie?
It's just time.
Yeah, right? I think it's going to be way less than 5 years. I really believe it's
well, and
well
you'll incorporate it into a real movie. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, so. That's what they're doing.
All right.
So we're almost out of time.
It's
almost out of time. Hassan, do you have any final thoughts?
No.
No.
Lee, do you have any final thoughts?
Check out my screenplay contest on Film Freeway. Blue Eye screenplay contest. No, filmfreeway.com.
Okay.
You just go there and go to...
That's way better than what my final thought would have been.
Yeah.
So that is it for this week's news segment. Everybody listen to us on the air. We'll see you next time. For everybody else, stay tuned for more. It came from the radio.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From The Radio. Get out. Get out.
Looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Rare Products NY has you covered. Our universal pergolas are modern, durable aluminum structures designed to withstand the elements while adding style and value. Enjoy all weather protection with adjustable louvers and glass options. Stay cozy in the winter with modernized screens and enclosures. Create a luxury ambiance with built-in LED lighting. And give your home or business a modern look that keeps guests coming back. For your on-site evaluation, call 516-225-8271. Email rareproductsny@gmail.com or visit rareproductsny.com. Rare Products NY. We've got you covered.
Hi, I'm Olivia Youngers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came From The Radio.
Now, back to our show.
This is Jolly Saladino from It Came From The Radio. I'm here live at Long Island Convention of Horror, and I'm here and very, very happy to be here with the Queen of Darkness, the multi-talented Shannon Michelle Collins. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well, darling. How are you?
I'm a little slice of heaven now that I'm sitting next to you. Shannon, tell everybody what you do.
So I am a horror host for a paranormal streaming network called Paraflix. It has all things spooky on there. It's kind of like chiller theater or chiller whatever for paranormal things, so it's really, really cool. I enjoy doing that. I do modeling. I'm acting right now in a movie called The Hellbound Covenant. We're hoping that it comes out by October, November. It's about the 1970s based on the satanic things that would happen around that time and how spooky it is. I'm not going to give too much away because I want you to come see the movie, and I feel like if I give too much away, it'll ruin it. So I've been doing that, and I'm working on a paranormal series, NDA, can't say too much about that. So I've been pretty busy, I'm loving it, yeah.
So I'm so amazed with the paranormal. Tell us some of your experiences with that.
I've had a lot of experiences with paranormal. I was an investigator, or I am an investigator. I've been investigating for 14 years at this point. You know, it's incredible because you can sometimes feel the history of the places that you're going to, and to be able to step back almost in time and almost relive that history with them. It's pretty cool to have communication from things that you can't see. As a paranormal investigator, we try to debunk all of that stuff to make sure that we are getting legitimate responses to what we're doing. But when you know that you're alone in a room and you're asking questions and you have a recorder or a camera that picks up audio and you have something talking back with you, it's really cool and it's terrifying too. So I enjoy that. My experiences are a little scary, so I don't know if I could say that, but yeah.
Well, like, I would not be able to do that, because I will be so far away from that house the minute I hear anything that's not... But I have. In Smithtown, I've heard everything. So, Smithtown is a hotbed, a paranormal hotbed, isn't it?
Yeah, Smithtown is definitely filled with his, you know, all of the island is, but I know that there are hot spots. Smithtown is definitely a hot spot for some stuff. Southampton is a hot spot for some stuff. I think there is some farmhouses around there that have definite activity in the Smithtown area, I believe. If you go to longislandparanormal.com, they have a whole list of, and it's constantly being updated, but they have a whole list of haunted locations on and off the island, with some stories, both the history of the place and the paranormal history as well. So it's pretty cool if you are interested and you want to look something up.
Okay. Yeah, I've witnessed some stuff. We've talked about it. And so it's definitely out there. So now, where can people get in touch with you and see what you're about and see how very beautiful you are? So where can they do that?
So if they want to give me a follow on Instagram, they can. It's a dream underscore within a scream. On Facebook, Shannon Michelle 1L Collins, the Queen of Darkness. Or you can go to my website, adreamwithinascream.com. And if you go through the menu, I think there's a little link tree button that'll bring you to everything else.
I want you to know I love that dream scream thing.
Yeah, thank you. So actually, that name was given to me by my friend Thomas O'Connell. He has collabed on some poems that I have done, and I was trying to find my way, and I was like, I didn't want to use my actual name at that point. And he's like, why not? You're just a dream within a scream. And I was like, that's it. And I asked his permission. I was like, do you mind if I use that? I use it for the title of my book, and then it just stuck with me, and I love it so much. But he took that off of a play from Edgar Allan Poe. So, well, not obviously, some people might not know that, but A Dream Within a Dream. So, yeah.
And just before we go bye-bye, I just want to say that I have your book of poetry. I love that book. It's amazing.
Thank you so much. It was an interesting book because it is my poetry, but it's not at the same time, because I was automatic writing through a spirit. So it was their impressions, their feelings, and the more I was doing it, the more it sounded like poems. And I wound up getting like over 200 writings from that particular session. Well, not in one session, but throughout the time with that particular spirit. And when I put it together, it told a story, and so that was pretty incredible. And then from there, I got back into doing poems myself, and it's just taken off since then. So thank you. I appreciate that. It means a lot.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. Shannon, thank you so much for talking with us. And folks, I cannot tell you how multi-talented this young lady is. Besides the fact, we're not even talking to how drop-dead gorgeous she is and beautiful. You also model, right?
Yes, I do.
And everybody, you can see pictures on our Facebook page. Go to Shannon's social media. You can see what she's about. An amazing lady. Shannon, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I love being around you and talking to you. You're such a great time every time. So thank you.
Thank you. This is Charlie Saladino from It Came From the Radio at Long Island Convention of Horror. Back to you in the studio, Mark.
This is Michael Bell, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe, and I am here at CradleCom, and I am with It Came From The Radio.
Now, back to our show.
You're listening to It Came From The Radio. You know this is Jennifer Elise Feldman. If you don't, you do now. I'm here with Gabe Symbolista. Now, Gabe is a Touretter, which I just learned that term, since a young age, and he's always wanted to work in film. So right now, he's 38 whole years old, working in the film industry, fulfilling his dreams, which is very cool. I just spoke to him last week about things he's working on. It's very cool. Very cool. He's a cameraman. He's a video editor. He's a producer. I'm sure he's an emotional and physical support to a lot of people. He's a very caring guy, very empathetic guy. He's a pianist. He plays a piano. Let's not confuse that. And he's following his dream and fulfilling his dreams of becoming a director while dealing with, I'd say it's a pretty severe case of Tourette's for most of your life. So yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Jen. Yeah, my Tourette's has had its ups and downs. It's evolved a lot since I was younger. It used to be a lot worse. But now my verbal tics are like back to the beginning, where my verbal tics were worse than my physical tics, or motor tics as they're called. So
okay.
It takes a toll on me. So, but it's funny, like you said, you know, when working in the industry, when working on sets, my Tourette's just goes away. Like I'm able to control it.
Really?
Very well. Really? Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
It's just a common thing with people with Tourette syndrome that when they focus on something, when they're honed in on something, their Tourette's goes away or it dies down, so to speak.
I have intense, well, not really now. I'm almost 42, but I'd say most of my life, everyone, well, thank you. Today I'm looking pretty young, but it depends on the day. Yeah, I'd say more than half my life, I've had like very insane like food cravings. Because, you know, I go by the belief that all humans are addicts. So you want to pick the addiction that's like the most beneficial, like healthy addictions, rather than the unhealthy ones. And that those healthy addictions can kind of crowd out bad ones. But I would say, you know, for years of my life, I had bad food cravings. You know, people disappointed me. I'd want to go get, you know, ice cream with sprinkles. That's just like a thing. It's like, it sounds silly, but. But when on a film set and doing that with things I love creatively, I don't think about, you know, ice cream with sprinkles. I don't think about having bread with butter. I just think about the process and who I'm with and helping them or getting the shot. I really don't even think about food at all.
It's so very funny you said that everyone's an addict, because there's a great quote on a trailer for Trainspotting 2. I'm going to send it your way. It's like, you're an addict, so be addicted. But be addicted to the good things, family, friends, what you're passionate about. It's almost like encouraging healthy addictions.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the brain, it's wired a certain way. So you do something, let's say you have a food at 5 o'clock today, there's a very high chance you're going to crave that same food at 5 o'clock the next day. So you can wire yourself in a way that's going to set you up for a good life or a crappy life. But anyway, back to you. I want to ask you some questions now. People often fantasize about the film industry or some type of job, or, you know, a woman or a man, and they put it on a pedestal and they think, oh, I'm going to work in the entertainment industry and it's going to be like this. So what fantasies did you have, and like, how are things different now that you're actually working in the industry?
So since I was 5 years old, I loved cinema, like specifically horror, but I expanded as I got older.
Mm-hmm.
And I always liked other things like archaeological stuff, like paleontology when I was younger. But like, it's never something I could see myself doing as a profession. Over the years, I developed a passion and a dream to be a director. And I know that I've directed a few short films when I was in college, or when I was done with college. I went to School of Visual Arts in New York City, and I did a few short films. And I got a taste of what it was like. And I have and over the years, you know, even before I got into the industry, which is just in the last several years, I've had a lot of friends in the industry for the last, like, I'd say 15 years or so. And I've been blessed because a lot of them have become close friends of mine, some of which because of the Tourette's. because it's a conversation starter, because it connects people. And like, oh, I have a cousin who has Tourette's. I have a friend who I went to school with, a friend who has Tourette's. Like even some of the Terminator cast I connected with because of my Tourette's. Like one had a friend she put me in touch with who hopefully can help me with my Tourette's. Or Schwarzenegger's stunt double told me about a friend of his who has Tourette's. We sat at the bar Saturday night and just chilled and spoke, you know, and it's like, you know, Tourette's is a conversation starter and it connects me with a lot of people. So I'm grateful for it as much as it caused me pain. But I also feel like as an empathetic person. But as for this film industry, I've been wanting to work in the film industry since I was young. And only in the last few years during COVID, I've officially reached that point. And it was all because I worked on a I hosted a podcast called called the Indie Escape Network, or the network is called the Indie Escape Network, and my podcast is called Symbolistic Cynicism. It's a play on my name. And I met a director in it named Cindy Sanabria, who's great, who was working on a film called Horror Able and Horror Able Women, a documentaries about filmmakers and actors with disabilities.
Right.
And we connected by, I was interviewing her, and then eventually she hired me to be her editor, and I wound up being editor on both films because the editors dropped out or they couldn't do it for whatever personal disability issues or whatever. And
they weren't able.
They weren't able, yeah. And I took on the role, and I edited the short at first, and then she had an editor for the feature, and then the editor for the feature dropped out, so I took on the feature. And that feature is one of the projects I'm most proud about, because I got to it went to a film festival. I edited the whole film in a shorter amount of time than the short film, Horrible Women, and it went to a big film festival in Florida, Spooky Empire. And I was honored to be part of my first panel with my director Cindy, who directed the film. I edited it, and I'm very proud of it. Now it's on Amazon Prime.
Very good. I was going to ask you. And the name is called Horror Able?
Two words. Horror Able. And the Horror Able Women, the short, which the feature also has women, but the short is strictly women. The short is on YouTube and the feature is on Amazon Prime.
Cool. All right. Nice. Now, let's see.
I just want to mention that that opened up doors for me as I progressed. Like, I got more jobs in the film industry after that. So it's like you get your foot in the door. Even though I knew a lot of these celebrities prior to working in the industry, now some of them work with me or want to work with me or ask me to something. So it was an honor, yeah.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years you were telling me about working on this, and then ever since then, it seems like you've been really busy. So
very grateful.
Did you think that this would open doors for you?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of odd jobs and ongoing projects over the years, like editing projects, which I got my editing skills 20 years ago before I even went to college.
Wow.
So I have done photography and videography before that. So I knew that working jobs would open up more potential and possibilities for me. And but I didn't think like I get so many, like in a short period of time, I get so many small, like even if they weren't like big jobs, like it added up. And now I have my own IMDb page, which is, I never would have thought a few years ago that I'd have that so soon, you know, even though I've been doing this for years. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm not surprised. It makes sense. It's cool. I'm really happy for you.
By the way, over there in your posters over there, your movie poster, Night's End, is right behind me.
Oh, maybe. Oh, I see. I see a little bit. Yeah.
Sorry, I had to point that out.
Oh, yeah. All right. So what would you say was one or two of the coolest things that you worked on?
So definitely Horror Able is definitely my most proud one. I've worked on a number of projects.
Mm-hmm.
I have some upcoming ones which I'm very excited about, but I can't say anything. But I've worked on as a cameraman on a short film by one of the stars of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. He directed this film, and he hired me as a cameraman, and he's been praising me ever since. He even praised me before. Like he found me very intriguing, and he was very excited to work with me. And I worked as assistant camera or third cameraman on his film. And it wound up in film festivals all over the world, and wound up winning film festivals all over the world, which I'm honored to be part of that. And I also, even when I was in LA, and my friend, my friend asked me to be involved in a horror film, and I wound up doing the BTS on the upcoming Boop horror film, the Betty Boop horror movie. Now that the public domain, you have the Mickey Mouse, you have the Popeye, you have the Winnie the Pooh, all these horror public domain horror films. So I got to work as a BTS photographer and videographer on the Betty Boop horror film. And also, I mentioned, you know, that I knew these directors and people, these filmmakers and actors all before I got into the industry. I actually, when I was in LA, one of my favorite filmmakers, one of the Saw filmmakers, actually asked me to film his podcast. And that was like a dream come true. That was one of the best days of my life. Not because I got to film a podcast, but because it was one of my favorite filmmakers that I've been dreaming to work with. To ask me to work with him and another one of my favorite filmmakers on their podcast. And that was an honor. It was a dream come true.
Well, you know, I don't know. I've known you for maybe over 10 years, I want to say.
12 years almost.
And I think you're pretty trustworthy and, you know, you care. You seem to have like a pretty strong commitment like me to like want to do the right thing, and obviously you followed through a bunch of times. So one thing like both my parents taught me from like a young age is, you know, sure, you want to have the skills, people want to work with you if you have you know, certain skills or connections that they need, sure, but people, including myself, when I'm looking for people to include on things, they want to work with someone that they can trust or people that they have a good character. So I'm sure people met you and are like, okay, he obviously has the editing skills. He obviously has the camera skills. He obviously knows like everything about film. Maybe not everything, but you know so much.
I have a good.
But you also have a character.
Yes, I am a character.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you try really hard to do the right thing.
I have a good sense of humor. I've been told on sets that I bring a lot of energy, good energy to the sets.
Okay.
From people I have just met, that I get that morale going. So,
Actually, you came to the film festival that I think, I don't know if I was, I wasn't hosting, I was hosting shows there, but I wasn't hosting the whole event that time. No, maybe I was, but whatever, it doesn't matter. But I was hosting a lot of stuff.
To the actual show, like the
I don't remember. One year I hosted both.
You did the Scream thing?
Yes, and you came and you really helped out with filming, but also there was like a lot of moving parts, and one of the cast members even got kicked out. He was so problematic. My cast member got kicked out. I think he got kicked out twice. They got let back in or something. And someone else brought an actual knife. The guy playing Mike Myers, he didn't bring a fake knife. He brought an actual like a steak knife. And I'm like, you can't. Wait, what? So there was mayhem, but you were very supportive.
It's not rubber. Yeah.
No, it was real, and I'm like, you can't. What the hell? Yeah, I know. This is what happens when you cast people who aren't actors. But you were very supportive, and I really needed support that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When somebody listen, I've done my fair share of mistakes in my life and said stupid things, but the thing is that when it comes to at the end of the day, I care about my friends and I worry about them and I want them to feel safe, and like if I ever made anybody feel unsafe, I would be kicking myself for years, you know?
Right. I'm trying to think if I've ever made anyone feel unsafe. I feel like I should make more people feel unsafe, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm surprised you don't. You're pretty tough. You're pretty tough, Jen.
Really?
I don't know. I think you're tough.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to mess with you.
Yeah, no. I had to calculate a long time ago, around the time we first met, because someone really was going after me, and it's happened since then. But I really calculated. I was really afraid. I actually caught myself doing what the phrase is, sleeping with one eye open. I caught myself actually like having one eye open at one point because I was so afraid this guy was going to come through my ground floor apartment window and like kidnap me to make the things come true. So I calculated, okay, if this guy really did like come after me, I'm like, I figured out it would really be like Kazakhstan going against the US and China and Russia, and it would be no problem. So, you know, whatever. But anyway, back to you. Now, the surprises in filmmaking. I feel like filmmaking, for me, Even recording interviews today, it's full of surprises. I had surprises on my last interview, things that never happened. What are some unexpected things that have happened on the film set or post-production, pre-production?
Well, weather is definitely one. I mean, but that's not unsuspecting, you know, just bad weather.
Sure.
I wouldn't say unsuspecting. I'd say, like, unfortunate or like things that went wrong or things that were just disappointing. But that happens with all sets. Like, I know sometimes, like, cameras have issues, so I have to constantly, if I, let's say I'm running three cameras and one of them heats up too much, and they're not mine, but it was heating up too much, I have to turn it off and let it cool off. And then, so I have to, like, because let's say a video was going to be multicammed, where we shoot with multiple cameras, and then we edit it together, and because we time it, and we edit it together, and cut it together, it could cut from different angle to different angle, but then we lose an angle because the camera is hot, or the cameras have issues. Or sometimes there's drama with people on set, you know, sometimes you have that. And you've seen it in big productions, like with Christian Bale and other celebrities, you know, it happens sometimes. There's drama on set.
What kind of drama? Else? Can you tell us? Can you tell us any story?
I'd rather not, because it's for a project that I worked on it's not my place to say.
Okay.
But everything worked out in the end. That's all that mattered. The production was completed. And everything worked out. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And the film is hopefully coming out this year. I'm just looking forward to that. It was an honor to be part of. Even in the horror convention world or New York Film Festival or the film festival world, there's always going to be drama or patches you hit. Listen, there's a lot of good productions that run short on, not that I've run, well, sort of maybe, we're run short on funds and things had to be squeezed out, or like I had to take a pay cut. You know, to or not no pay at all, just so the production could watch its budget, and I offered to help out and take a role for free, you know, and that doesn't always happen. It has happened, but it's unfortunate. But you know what? If I could get my name in there, it's worth a day or two of work, you know.
Yeah, I always ask about what goes wrong and what goes right. Sure, it could be interesting, you know, for listeners, gossip, you know, but I'm not really the TMZ type. I'm more of like, let's diagnose the problem and prevent problems. Like Along Came Polly, the risk analysis, assessment analysis. So that's really why I ask. It's because if you know what went wrong on this set, you can go, oh, okay. Like, you know, let's say co-stars are dating. That can often end in a bad way. Maybe you don't want to do that. Or, you know, maybe you're having meetings and there's a lot of drinking involved. That's a lot of problems.
You know, it's very funny you said all this, because I just watched a video yesterday about Queen of the Damned with Aaliyah that came and that she died when it came out. And that the director was up to the third act and like the director didn't only film like 2/3 of the movie, and he was running low on funds, like that he had to bring his own funds. The actors had to put in their own funds. Like, they were squeezing themselves out for everything just to get the film done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like a third of the film or the finale or whatever, the climax. Like, they were working their asses off, like, and spending so much of their own money just to get the film that they put so much into completed.
Hmm.
And that happens sometimes. Listen, even this first Saw film, the producers and directors, whichever, I forget. Put all their own money into the film and like put in everything they had, and now it's like a billion-dollar plus box office hit, like, franchise, you know.
Right.
You never know, but like, and there was a lot of problems in productions in some of the Saw films, like just getting things done and completed, and disagreements, like, so that it just happens sometimes. But it's worth the investment for a lot of people. Sometimes it's not. But for the people I know, it has been worth the investment.
Right. Well, maybe it was coincidence that the Saw creators invested, or maybe something, they had a good instinct, because part of success in life, you know, in health, if anything, is knowing when to double down, when to keep investing in this food, this film, this actor.
They had faith in it.
And when to pull out.
I don't think I've ever seen the first Saw film, but the ending is
I think I did.
So the ending is one of the biggest, greatest, rated one of the greatest twist endings of all time in cinema. So I think that ending is what got people to fall in love with it and birthed the sequels, which six more sequels over the course of the next 6 years or 7 years.
Crazy.
And then more sequels later on in the long run. And
right.
Yeah, it's become one of the most successful horror franchises of all time.
Yeah, I actually like felt physical pain while watching it, because it was just the way it was done and shot. It was very scary, and I felt like things were happening.
Yeah, there's a lot of fast-paced editing in the Saw films, which I enjoy. But what I love about it most is the non-linear storytelling and the twists. It's very complex storytelling.
Interesting. So it wasn't like someone being like thrown into a meat grinder. That
wasn't
No.
There was definitely somebody getting thrown into a pit of needles. That's for sure.
Oh, the meat grinder thing.
Definitely similar things. I wouldn't say a meat grinder. The meat grinder thing was more Texas Chainsaw 3D. That was my friend Dan Yeager played Leatherface in that. But I'm just looking at the poster of him. But yeah, he chases somebody and cuts off their hand, and they fall right into a meat grinder. But I don't think there's a meat grinder in Saw, but there's definitely grinder.
Yeah, there's like some pigs. There's like a bunch. It's the thing
the
that all
the pigs
crushes
fall into
the
meat grinder, and it cuts up the dead pigs, and it drowns a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's something like that. One. I don't know. It is gross. But anyway, you know, I like Caddyshack. I like stuff like that.
Comedy,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to laugh. I don't want to see anyone hurt in real life at all. Even if I don't really don't like them.
I'm more grossed out by a little bit of blood in real life than I do in the horror movies with the gore.
Interesting. Let's say
my family hit their head.
We got to end, Gabe.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We got to cut it and pull it off. Sorry. Right. We're way over the time limit. And listen, I'd have you here for a few more minutes, but I got someone waiting. And Mark Torres says I have to keep these interviews to 20 minutes or less. And we are over 20 minutes. So on that note, Gabe, tell us where to find you.
Find me on Instagram at GabrielCymbals2. That's GabrielCymbals2. At Gmail, I'm talking about my Gmail. That's my Instagram. My Facebook is Gabe Cymbalista, spelled Cymbalista. That's Cymbalista. The first name Gabriel. I don't think you need help spelling that. My Twitter, I don't really use much. My TikTok is Gabe Cymbals or Gabe Cymbalista. I'm not sure, but you could pretty much figure that out. And yeah, I don't really use Snapchat much, but sometimes. But yeah, I'm a social media whore, I'll admit it. So I post a lot, but I like to entertain people. I have friends who just love watching my stuff online and get them through the day. So.
Well, look them up. I'm sure Gabe will be up to some really interesting things this year and next year and probably the year after that. And on that note, back to the studio with Mark Torres for more It Came From The Radio.
If you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of the show,
tough.
Go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From The Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.